Later that day, I fired off an email. Dear Professor Stebbing, I am sure you remember when I first met you a few years ago with Rachel T.C., demanding she should have metformin and a combination of lovastatin and etodolac. Apologies for that. A mixture of frustration and, more frustration, I think. I can't tell you how delighted I am to see some joined-up thinking, treating cancer as a systemic disease and not just a local problem. There is too much emphasis on micro-targeted therapies nowadays and scant regard to the macro. I'm so pleased to see a cancer clinic offering to use these cheap, dirty drugs, as I used many of them myself, to overcome cancer back in 1999, alongside dietary changes and detox. You may have forgotten, or I may not have told you, I had stage 4 cervical, which had spread to my lungs 16 years ago. I persuaded 2 integrative doctors to prescribe dipridamol, persantin, and later metformin. The latter I am still taking, and I also later took cimetidine for a short while, which I am ashamed to admit I bought direct from a Canadian online pharmacy. Lovastatin and etodolac were a combination my oncologist, now retired, decided had enough research behind it to prescribe to me in a high dose for 3 months. She was in fact delighted when I gave her my research, as she was investigating statins at the time. I know you are the chair of the World Vaccine Congress, and I wondered if you have read the online article in The Scientist titled Bacteria Boost Viral Vaccine Response about probiotics and vaccines. I'm sure this is old news, and this article relates to flu, but I firmly believe the gut and the immune system are inextricably linked, and that to get the best effect from a vaccine a few weeks prior to injecting the patient, that the patient should be on a really good probiotic. Intravenous vitamin C would also prime the immune system for cancer vaccines. Are you also looking into 2-methoxyestradiol? And I am sure you know all about the exciting vitamin D research. Sulindac, lovastatin for colon cancer, gemcitabine, curcumin for pancreatic cancer, low-dose naltrexone and alpha-lipoic acid. I could go on. I would love to come and do some voluntary work for you. Would there be anything I could usefully do? Anyway, delighted to see this clinic up and running. I will be sending patients your way, and I am serious about a job, as I want to do something meaningful whilst I write my memoirs. Best regards, Jane McClelland. I hit the send button and wondered how Professor Stebbing and the clinic would respond. Chapter 18. Mobilizing the Troops. Whichever way I looked at it, the Care Oncology Clinic were trying to achieve something monumental, and I knew I had to help. If they proved successful, they would threaten not just pharmaceutical giants, but also major cancer charities, like Cancer Research UK, CRUK. The latter survive both on cancer being incurable and on keeping the pharmaceutical industry with a steady supply of guinea pigs for their trials and new patents. CRUK's mission was to get more patients onto clinical trials, to stop more patients dying whilst taking lots of expensive medicines, not to find a cure. Drug companies base new drug launches on a 30-year profit return, with drugs developed to encourage repeat prescriptions over many years rather than one-off cures. Old off-patent drugs make them very little. So who were the brave people behind this clinic who were daring to challenge the status quo? With a bit of background digging, I discovered the clinic is owned by Seek, a private biotech company with some seriously clever scientists. They are developing metformin and other old drugs as well as ibuprofen so that they can be delivered more efficiently to the areas needed with fewer side effects. Genius. They don't hope to make much money from the clinic. It's there to study the drug combinations, put into practice a metabolic approach, and allow doctors to do the job they signed up for as medical students. To improve lives and get patients better, not poison them with ever more toxic drugs and make their last few months on earth a misery. The very next day, a return email arrived in my mailbox from Gregory Stoloff at the CARE Oncology Clinic. It appeared they were equally excited to have discovered me too. Gregory and Dr. Robin Bannister wanted to meet me as soon as possible to share ideas. Holy moly, I can't tell you what a shock this was. For years, I had been challenging the way oncologists prescribe treatments, quietly waging a little war on my own, championing the old drugs and losing. To be asked what I think, and to share my ideas? To me, these concepts were alien to most of the medical profession. Most oncologists were a brick wall. When I met Gregory and Robin, I was blown away by their enthusiasm and commitment. We were so much on the same page, I felt like crying. We had travelled completely different roads to arrive at the same junction, and we were now driving off in the same direction. Even though their cocktail is currently dismissed by the medical profession at large, I found nothing controversial in their approach. It totally matched mine. Combine the old drugs and attack the different metabolic drivers. Stress the cancer, starve it, weaken it, and then trigger apoptosis. Gregory had worked on mergers between pharmaceutical giants. He saw firsthand how old drugs were left on the shelf, collecting dust. It's hard to get Gregory to speak about himself, but I've gathered he initially studied medicine before switching to finance, and his eyes remained open to the broader view and the big problems in medicine. But despite setting up his own pharmaceutical company to explore his ideas, he has always been an outsider in that world. His fresh and lateral approach to problems are what the industry needs, but they are unwelcome in a world dominated by large corporates with vested interests in maintaining high prices and profits before people. He doesn't fit the profile. It was an incredibly emotional meeting for me. I don't think they understood just how much it meant to be finally acknowledged for all the time and effort I had put into researching, not just for myself, but friends and family. They couldn't know the obstacles I'd faced to keep going despite the rejection and scorn. The realization of just how close I might have been to saving some of my friends if only I'd got them on more of the repurposed drugs. Used appropriately at the right time, in the right combination, at the right dosages, I knew they held so much potential to save lives. There will always be patients for whom treatment comes too late. Nothing, no matter how amazing, is going to work if organ damage is too severe from other treatments or from the cancer itself. Long-term remissions, even with late-stage patients, will be the aim of the clinic, and I have every confidence they can do it. It's hard to talk about cures. I haven't had a cancer episode for years, but I can never say I'm cured. Confident that my disease is controlled, yes, but cured is a big, uncomfortable word. Certainly, the longer I remain disease-free, the more confident I am. When I said I felt I'd been overtreated with chemotherapy, they completely agreed. What? I had to keep pinching myself that I was hearing correctly. Indeed, they plan to get patients back to normal using low-dose chemotherapy where possible by getting their oncologist to agree. When I came out of that meeting, I had never felt so totally, passionately driven. I knew I would do whatever it took to get this therapy accepted by mainstream doctors. Patients had suffered enough. How was I to spread the word? When I mentioned how I had cured my cancer with a handful of old drugs, and how there was a new clinic offering a similar cocktail in a few Facebook groups, I did not get the enthusiastic response I'd expected. Patients were unsure of using any drugs, no matter how small the toxicity. Most wanted natural cures, if anything. patients would need to be educated. It was time to come out and admit publicly that I had been terminally ill, with a closed Facebook group dedicated to off-label drugs with anti-cancer effects. Directly promoting the Care Oncology Clinic was not allowed by law. The Cancer Act, 1939, is an antiquated ruling that prevents advertising for cancer treatments. While I understand it helps prevent corrupt salespeople selling fake cures, it also stops people discovering effective help, too. Ultimately, it keeps Big Pharma in control. I had to be cautious, only mentioning the clinic by name when asked. The clinic needed patients through its doors. Without the statistical data to show combination therapy works, it risked being shut down. It still does. Over the next few years, they hope to recruit about 5,000 patients on the study, and so it's become my mission to spread the word to the masses. With the Cancer Act dangling over my head, this is proving more difficult than I thought. I have also run into quite unexpected resistance from friends and doctors. A few weeks ago, I was telling a friend about the clinic over dinner when she mentioned her father had advanced cancer. "You must send him over to the clinic," I said, expecting her to be as enthusiastic as I was. I'd explained the treatments and how they'd help starve his cancer, but her response took me by surprise. "I don't believe it. If it's so good, then how come my dad's oncologist isn't giving it to him already?" she said, looking completely unconvinced. I should have known this might be the reaction. It's a pretty instinctive question, and one that comes up regularly. As a layperson, you only realize the failings of the medical system when you've been in the thick of it and it's let you down. Even then, most people have unerring faith that everything possible was done to save their loved one. But was it? It is not unusual or even unexpected for a well-meaning relative of a patient to remain closed to suggestions outside the conventional path. Relatives can unwittingly be the hardest obstacle to a patient's survival. Taking a less orthodox approach in their eyes is too risky. They may think complementary treatments will only hasten their demise. New immunotherapy drugs or exciting vaccines are very enticing, but you shouldn't put your eggs in one basket. Adding metabolic drugs that starve the cancer will weaken the enemy and stop drug resistance. By adding extra weapons to your anti-cancer armory, you can raise the cancer-busting power of traditional drugs. Combinations are the answer to this emperor of all maladies. It is not immortal. Fear of the unknown and an unquestioning faith in the system is a driving force behind pharmaceutically fueled oncology. Treading an alternative path can cause terrible arguments, depression, anxiety, and family breakups at a time when everyone should be pulling together. Often the patient is being pulled in so many directions, it's easier just to keep the peace and stick to doing as they're told. Even my own GP is resistant to the idea of using a combination of old drugs. When I mentioned I was going to be volunteering in a cancer clinic, he said, "That's the last place you need to be." I had taken a press cutting with me from the Independent newspaper about Dr. Bannister, the clinic, and how his wife's tumours were shrinking with the treatment, hoping my local doctor's surgery wouldn't mind me putting it up on their notice board. I'd shown the receptionist, who thought the story was amazing, particularly in light of my own experience. "Of course you can put it up," she said. Before I did, I decided I ought to run it past my doctor first. He took one look at the article, speed reading, and dismissed it. "This is all very well, but there's no science behind it. Where's the evidence?" "What? There was a ton of science. I couldn't believe my ears. Apart from ample science in the article, the proof was sitting right next to him, living and breathing, despite a terminal diagnosis. I think he'd been looking after me for so long he'd forgotten I had been stage 4. Results will eventually be published in a peer-reviewed journal,